Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Yes, the finals are set. Saints, why aren't they rated? D's the team to beat. But can anyone stop Carlton and the Bombers? Where to next? Welcome to the Footy Podcast. I'm Will Hogan. Today on the show, we chat to Sam Landsberger on the biggest issues, selection dilemmas, and who is primed for finals. The AFLW season is upon us. Lauren Wood gives you all you need to know. And Essendon, what does their off-season look like? Jay Clark takes us inside a tough road ahead at the Hangar. It might be pre-finals bye week, but there's so much to talk about in footy. Let's do it. Now we welcome Sam Landsberger to the podcast. Sammy, how are you going?
Not too bad, William. How are you?
Yeah, I'm going well. It's, you know, September, is it nearly? It's August. September will be in the air next year. No, sorry, next week. Finals time, spring, mowing, all that sort of gear.
Yep.
Do you like this time of year?
Oh, I don't like the bye period. It's a bit of a, you feel like you're sitting on your hands for 10 days, but let's rock and roll for next Thursday night.
Should they scrap the bye?
Look, it probably does more harm than good. It's just a long wait to get the ball bounced in September.
Wildcard weekend in it instead?
Oh, I'm a big fan of that. I have been for some time. I think it would have been great to see. And I think that would reward the top 6 teams properly. They would get the week off, and if you're, you know, 7 to 10 or whatever it is, you'd have to play that extra week. I think that would be a fairer way to sort out who makes September, but we're not there yet.
Imagine how tired the Bombers would be playing another game.
Well, they'd be in, wouldn't they? They're 10th.
They're tired enough.
Jeez, who's 6? That would be, what, Saints Bombers?
Yeah.
Another 10 go around. Let's focus on what's actually going to happen.
Yeah, so it's going to be a big, you know, it's always a big opening weekend. There's some great games throughout the board. You're very good at, you know, zeroing in on the key matchups, selection dilemmas. You've done it in the Herald Sun for the last few years. You've done it again on Monday's paper. What's the game that sticks out to you most as the cracker, the one we've got to look forward to?
Let's be honest. I think the premier is going to come from Thursday night. Yep. I think the winner of Thursday night, they won't have to leave the MCG for all of September. This is obviously talking the Collingwood-Melbourne game. And that for me is the one that shapes September. I can't see the loser beating Brisbane at the Gabba in a prelim. So I think the loser is just about gone and the winner is just about, you know, in the grand final. This game is massive.
And so you did tip Melbourne in that prediction. Why was that?
I just think on form. Collingwood, yes, they kept Essendon to 3 goals on Friday night, but let's be honest, that was a glorified training run. The Bombers were disgusting.
Yeah.
I think over the last 8 weeks, you know, Melbourne's really got their game going. You compare that to 12 months ago where they were just, I think they went win-loss, just about just every going game into September. I think they are really humming right now. Jake Malksham obviously hurts, but they've had a bit of a revolving forward line for some time. Maybe Tom McDonald gets that look in. He hasn't played since round 11, but he kicked 5 in the VFL on the weekend. I just really like what the Demons are doing. And I think Collingwood, geez, they were the best team in, what, May, June, July, not in August, and that's got real alarm bells to me. Similar to Port Adelaide, I think of the top 4 teams, Collingwood and Port Adelaide just hanging on, and the best probably teams in it right now are probably Melbourne, Brisbane, Carlton, Giants. Like they'd be the top 4 on form, and given where they're starting in September, I think Melbourne are the overwhelming premiership favourites.
What's the biggest question mark on Melbourne?
I think it's Clayton Oliver. Yep. I mean, sir, I was just having a look at some matchups before. So if I just pull this up in front of me, so obviously Finn McGuinness got him last week. You know, they played 56 minutes head to head. Oliver had 5 disposals on the weekend. He had 52 minutes on Callum Mills and they had 15 disposals each. Mm. Now, technically, teams at the top of the ladder, they don't tag. They back in their own system. But, geez, you'd be tempted to sit on him in September. It's a real question mark. He hasn't really added much to Melbourne since he's come back into the side. 2 weeks off might freshen him up a little bit more if he's still got a bit of a niggle. But, yeah, for me, that is the one. And then you look on Sunday as well. Ryan Clark sat on Christian Salem as well. So if you can clamp Melbourne Stars, you might be able to sort of bring them back a little bit. But I think overall that their system really is humming.
So do you think Collingwood will pull that lever? Do they have anyone that can do that?
Well, probably not. I mean, every week this year, Craig McRae's been asked, would you tag Nick Dacos? Well, now the question needs to be asked of Craig McRae, will you tag Clayton Oliver? Will you tag Christian Salem? I can't think of them doing it too much. You know, maybe a Jack Chris might be able to do a bit of a job on, say, a Christian Salem, but that's a bit of a guess. You know, on history, you'd suggest no, they'll just back themselves in. It's got to be said that, you know, while Melbourne strangled Collingwood on King's birthday this year, the Pies had a lot out that day, which will be there in September. So I think, you know, Degoey, side bottom, mixed day, maybe a couple of Ginnivan, they all didn't play that day. Obviously, Oliver didn't play for Melbourne that day. So there's going to be a fair bit of change since they last met. But yeah, just on form and, you know, what the alarming defensive numbers are calling in recent weeks, yeah, I've got Melbourne as the favourites in that one.
Carlton and Sydney on a Friday night. Carlton, you've mentioned they are going quite well. How important is it for them to win a final, given the year they've had?
Oh, they just have to. And I mean, if we're honest, Sydney, I think, is the luckiest team to play in September for quite some time. I mean, if North Melbourne's interchange steward could count, or there was a goal umpire with 20-20 vision at Adelaide Oval in round 23, they're not playing finals. I mean, their two wins, they were absolutely gifted by factors outside of their control. And you take those 8 points away, and they're nowhere near the top eight. So, I think they're very lucky to be in September.
But they are there and they could be dangerous.
They are there and they've got some players who are back in form. For me, a really interesting matchup is potentially Isaac Heaney on Patrick Cripps.
Yep.
So in round 11, I think it was when they met, Heaney went on to on to Cripps and he really clamped him. Now, clearly Heaney's been playing forward for the best part of, you know, the season pretty much. He was a whipping boy a couple of months ago. He kicked 15 goals, 14 to start the year. He's kicked 15 goals, 4 since. And that was 15 goals, 2 before a couple of behinds on Sunday. So he's turned his form around. Errol Goulden, I think, is the best player just about in the competition over the last couple of months.
He's amazing.
He's such a lock for the All-Australian team. You know, 42-2 on Sunday.
Brownlow Smokey as well. In my view.
Yeah. I don't know what he'd be paying. But absolutely. I mean, Chad Warner, he's built for September. He was just about the Swans' only player in the grand final last year.
Him and Robbie Fox. Robbie Fox's best game as a grand final last year.
Yeah. I mean, even his qualifying final against Melbourne. Some of his efforts that day really stood tall. And you can't see the Swans getting past the Blues. Yeah. I mean, they're very lucky as well. Tom McCartan got off at the tribunal last week because you'd suspect he's the man to try and stop Charlie Curnow. It'd be really interesting to see if they repeat that Heaney-Cripps matchup. Yeah. But across the board, Carlton, the form they're in, you park Sunday night. They didn't have a whole lot to play for apart from getting Charlie the Coleman. They did that. They won 9 in a row, I think it was, before then. Surely in front of a packed MCG, which will be a very one-sided crowd, you'd think they'd be too strong. And the big thing for Carlton there is that they're on the right side of the draw.
Yes.
They win that, they get an MCG semi-final against, obviously, the loser of Collingwood Melbourne. And that's where that game shapes as more important because, obviously, we spoke about the winner won't have to leave the MCG. Well, the loser runs into a red-hot Carlton. So straight sets would be a very dangerous possibility for the loser of Thursday night.
No, it's a very good point. And just quickly, there are two other games, Saints-GWS. Saints will get Max King back. GWS probably won't have Sam Taylor. Who wins?
Is that right? Sam Taylor's more unlikely
than likely.
I think
he's touch and go with his hamstring. So
that's massive.
Yeah.
That is absolutely massive. So, I mean, if Max King plays on Jack Buckley or whoever it might be, geez, that's a real dangerous matchup. Interesting, this is at the MCG. I actually don't mind that call from the AFL. I remember in 2015, the Dogs played Adelaide and it was at the MCG, not Marvel. So that set the precedent. But if we're being serious, if the Saints can't get a Marvel final against the Giants, well, then Marvel's never seeing a final again, is it?
I mean, not unless there's, you know,
four of the G.
Yep.
Even.
I think this is pretty stock standard now.
Yeah. So we move. And I like that. I think the MCG should be used for finals.
Who's your tip?
I went the Giants thinking Sam Taylor would play. If he doesn't play, that's a real swinger. Yeah. I think no one's really respected the Saints this year.
No, they haven't.
And internally, they feel that. Mm. They don't really, it doesn't bother them, but they're aware of it. Mm. I think since around 19, they're back to some of that defensive form from early in the year. Jimmy Webster and maybe a bit of Callum Wilkie, they'll be the players to play on Toby Green. So maybe a few sleepless nights for them, particularly as we head towards next Saturday. But yeah, it's a bit of a toss of the coin. I think if Sam Taylor plays, I'll certainly be tipping the Giants.
And just very, very quickly, Brisbane and Port at the Gabba?
Lions are certainties for me. Yeah, absolute certainties. I can't see Port Adelaide getting it done. Yeah. I think Brisbane, then they've won 9 of their last 11. One of those was that 1-point loss to Melbourne at the G. The other one, they put in a stinker against the Gold Coast in what was a legitimate shock. But yeah, I think the Lions are in form. I think there's red flags for Port Adelaide all over the park. I think they've really fallen away since that 12-game winning streak. And yeah, I think the Lions will book a home preliminary final, which will, yeah, put them in the box seat to play either Melbourne or Collingwood in the grand final.
Now, what will be the story of the finals?
Story of the finals? Oh, I think it's pretty simple. I think it's, can Nick Daicos hold on for the Brownlow medal? I think this is such a fascinating count. I mean, the Bonds probably polled on the weekend. Petrarca might sneak a vote on against Sydney on Sunday. I think he does hold on, and I think he deserves to hold on.
That'd be a massive story if he did.
Yeah.
It would. And now, the player that'll rise in the finals. Your riser? You haven't come prepared.
Player that'll rise in the finals. Oh, I think Joe Danaher might win a final off his own boot. Yeah.
That would be a story.
Yeah, I mean, he
Smoking Joe.
So he didn't play in the win against Melbourne last year, did he? I think his partner gave birth.
Yes, correct.
I've been watching the Lions closely in recent weeks, and I thought some of his late efforts, I think in that Fremantle win in Perth, where he played with a lot of desperation, and then maybe again against Collingwood the week after. I really like what Joe's doing at the moment. I think he's one that, you know, for a bit of a whipping boy for some time, he might just win them a final of his own boot, which he probably needs to do because he's fluctuated as he has throughout his whole career, particularly up at the Gabba.
No, that'd be a story. Sam, thanks for all your insight. Look forward to a great first week of finals in a week and a half time.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Will. This is
Brownies Podcast. G'day, it's John the Brown, the host of Brownies Podcast. Along with my boys Dino and Campbell Brown, we give you the world's loosest podcast.
How did you get locked up again?
I was set up by the Queensland Coppers.
This Bazball has been crazy. Everyone's f***ing Bazball.
Twiggy cash.
Shove the bullets next time we go to war. God forbid someone gets hurt.
Oh, there it is.
Well, ask your smart speaker to play Brownies Podcast or search for Brownies Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast.
And we're joined by Lauren Wood. Lauren, how are you going?
I'm well, Will. It's AFLW Eve, so it's exciting.
It's come around quickly.
It has. It's come around quickly. It's what did Beck Goddard describe it yesterday as a long run off a short pier this season.
A good point.
We had a quick turnaround last year, obviously only a few months to get organised, whereas it's been a very long time that Melbourne have been the reigning premiers.
Yeah. So set the scene. So AFLW, they've had a lot of change over the last, you know, 5-6 years. This year, what's the narrative around the competition?
Well, it almost feels like, and talking to a few people, that this will be the first real AFLW. And I mean that not in the way that it sounds, but this is a competition that has chopped and changed with timings of the season, with the number of teams, with COVID. Obviously, the season got cut short. We had two seasons last year. Last season, so season 7 of the comp, was our first with all 18 teams. But the extra 4 teams that came in late had such a quick run up to the season. They had to formulate a team, come up with a game plan, build their coaches. You know, it was a mad rush for them. So it sort of feels like that this will be our baseline season, if that makes sense.
Yep,
so
makes
as
sense.
We move forward, it'll be the same time of year, the same amount of teams, and this will be the season that we really sort of lay the foundations for what this will be become.
So it's a little bit of, you know, a bit more rhythm to it this,
big time,
this season.
Big time.
So it's interesting, in terms of just looking at the biz, a big 8-page lift out in the Herald Sun on Tuesday's paper and going through all the teams, you know, predicted finishes and whatnot. It looks like there's still a little bit of a gap between the best and the worst teams. Will that happen again this season?
Yeah, there is. I mean, Melbourne are clearly a cut above. They've essentially, the only player that they've really lost from that premiership core of last season is, of course, the great Daisy Pearce. Yep. So she's really the only, she is a big loss. And not only in a playing sense, she sort of moved to that forward role last season, but obviously the leadership, you know, that goes unsaid. But they only lost that one player, kept their core group together. North Melbourne, a little bit the same. They've always been thereabouts.
Yep.
Whereas Brisbane, even though they've lost the likes of Greta Bodie and Emily Bates to Hawthorn, Jesse Wardlaw to St Kilda, I think people are really expecting them to still be right in the thick of it. They've been pillaged a bit by expansion previously. They've got a great academy system, obviously a great coach in Craig Starcevich. So you'd expect them to be there. I think that'll just be, I guess, a symptom of growth. Like your strong sides are going to stay strong. But the more we see players like Bates and Bodie and Wardlaw and these and Chloe Malloy even going to Sydney, which is another expansion side, the more player movement that's going to come, we're only going to see things level out. So we had last off-season, we had about 10% of the playing cohort move clubs of the 540 players. So that was the biggest we'd seen.
Yep.
And I think now that the sort of floodgates have been open, the girls see these big names moving, you're only going to get that more. Teams get physically fitter. Coaches, you know, build their sort of strategies. It's only going to get better and better.
So if Melbourne are looking like they're the team to beat, and you've got North and Brisbane and Adelaide, the challengers, so they're the clubs. In terms of the players, who are the stars? Who are we looking out for?
Oh, well, I must admit, there's still those players that are thereabouts, isn't there? Like, I mean, Erin Phillips, she's still one of the great players.
So she'll
still
be dominant.
Two league BNFs. It's hard to believe, isn't it, really? I think she's nearly 38 off the top
of
my head. She's still going to be right in there. Monique Conti, though, she is really the standout. She crossed over from basketball, won a premiership at the Bulldogs. I think it was her first season, and then made the move to Richmond. She's been a standout selection in the crystal ball predictions in the lift out for the league BNF title this year.
Which she hasn't won?
She hasn't won it. So no, she won the league MVP last year, which is the player voted award. So she'll be right in the thick of it again. I'm really excited to see Emily Bates at Hawthorn. Yep. I think she's been a standout player, but a little bit off Broadway.
Yeah,
the fact
Brisbane,
that it was in Brisbane.
For those that don't know.
So she'll be down here. I mean, Emma Carney at North, she's just an absolute superstar. And Bree Davey, can't wait to see her back in the thick of it. She's a league BNF winner too, so she's been right at the top level of the game. Obviously struck down with an ACL last year, so she's back for Collingwood as well.
And one name that always jumps out, it's always interesting, is Jasmine Fleming, obviously daughter of Damien. She was a high draft pick. Where do you see her this year with the Hawks, who, you know, have, as you said, have had a little bit of change? It could be, you know, it could be a bit of a dark horse.
Yeah, massively. She's I can't understate how highly touted she's been, even coming into the draft last year. But was doing year 12. We know that the way that they packed the season into 2022, she was coming to the culmination of her schooling, and just having that extra year, now not having to worry about her studies. The word out of Hawthorn, and certainly watching their practice matches, is that these young players that obviously had their head in the books last year have now managed to get their bodies in the gym. So they're all looking that athletically stronger. They've had a full preseason under their belts. And Jasmine Fleming, I know Damien joked the night of the draft that that he might not be the greatest sporting achiever in the Fleming family for long. And, I mean, Emily Bates, she's been part of AFLW since this thing began.
Yeah.
And she said that Jasmine is the best young talent that she's ever seen.
Well, that's big
and can't wait to play alongside her. So that's the thing with AFLW, is it keeps getting better. The players that are coming through now, they're all pathway players. So they never sort of had that situation where they had to stop because they weren't allowed to play with the boys. The girls that are coming through the comp now, they've played since they were, you know, Oz kickers. Mm. So, they're really going to be pushing, I guess, as you said, the names that we've become to know so long. It's going to have these new faces.
And probably just finally, there has been a shift in terms of the locations and the stadiums this season. So there aren't going to be the biggest stadiums. There'll be no MCG, no Marvel, no Adelaide Oval games. There'll be games at, I think, Frankston in the first
Frankston's
round.
Frankston's there, yep.
What's been the player reaction to that? You've spoken to a lot over the last few weeks. Are they disappointed? Are they saddened? What's their view?
Yeah, it's been pretty split. Like, a lot of players made a comment that, you know, I would have thought, for example, like you mentioned Frankston, then Hawthorn are playing Essendon there this weekend. They played at Marvel Stadium in that same matchup last year, drew nearly 13,000 people. But a few of the players are saying 13,000 at Marvel, how that looks and feels while it's great to be in a stadium atmosphere versus a sold out, say, Kinetic Stadium at Frankston or Arden Street, for example. Icon Park is one that's cited as a really popular ground among players because it can get that sort of heaving atmosphere. So that's essentially what the league is trying to do. They've moved, like, the showdown, for example, in round one is going to be played at Norwood rather than Adelaide Oval. So that's essentially what they're trying to do is pack out these grounds, sell them out potentially, and I guess create that atmosphere around AFLW that if you want to come and see it, you got to buy a ticket. But I think they could have at least had some stadium matches in there. I think the optics, as they like to always talk about when it comes to AFLW, you know, it really sends a message that this is a game that belongs at the top tier. So it would have been nice to, I guess, see a smattering of those games throughout the fixture. But I suppose it's something to aim for in the years to come.
And just quickly, season opener, Melbourne Collingwood. Who's your tip?
Oh, Melbourne, for sure. Yep. I think they're going to unfurl their flag. They've never opened a season before. They love Icon Park. I can't go past the D's.
Friday night under the lights, D's as well. Loz, thank you. We look forward to the whole season.
Thank you. Enjoy it.
I'm Andrew Rule, the host of the podcast, A Life in Crimes. Here are some of the things that we've been talking about the last few weeks. The brutal truth is that when you start looking at it, they always kill or injure a lot more than each other.
The professional hitman used to be a professional hitman.
Evil strikes in all forms, but particularly as stupidity. Life and Crimes is available wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're joined by Jay Clark. Clarkie, how you going?
Hello, Will.
Do you like this time of year, Jay?
Oh, I love the finals. Yeah, love September, the high stakes. Excuse my phone there.
No, that's okay.
There is a lot happening, isn't there? It sort of feels like a long season at this point, and then we hit another gear with finals and the trade period. So looking forward to that. Some big names and big moves coming up and reputations to be enhanced in September.
You have grand final luncheons or finals luncheons, cash jobs, those sort of things? Or is that more for the other, you know, the former players?
I'm too busy here, mate.
That's it's a good point. We do keep you busy, which is good.
Yes, it is a great time of year, very exciting.
So one team that isn't in the finals, the Bombers, disappointing end of the year.
Yep.
What do Essendon fans now do for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think they have every reason to be completely filthy with the finish to the year, and that's perhaps really obvious to lose to GWS by 126 and then Collingwood it's by 70. Let's be honest, have we seen the white flag go up from a team go up like this before to end the season? Like, there's one thing to be sort of have one eye on your footy trip at the end of the year, but this is really pitiful from a team who, for the bulk of the year, I've been really impressed by. I mean, around 15-16, they beat Adelaide at Marvel Stadium, and I thought that they've got a brand and a hunger to play out, to play finals. But whether it's I think when you look at Essendon now, there's a whole melting pot of things. I don't necessarily think it's just one thing, but the leadership, I think Zach Merritt has done really well from an on-field leadership perspective this year. You said he wanted to become one of the best defensive players in the competition as a midfielder, and I reckon he's achieved that. So he's ticked that box definitely. But do they have the breadth of senior leadership across that team to really be a ruthless football club? And at this stage, it's definitely a no. So, and Jake Stringer's copped a lot of sort of attention about, well, he's the one, if he doesn't come back looking lean and, you know, 6 kilos lighter, then they ought to be really frustrated with him because he is a bit of a barometer. I know Dane Zorko lost 8 kilos last summer.
Is that right?
Yeah. So if he can do it, and Jake probably has played a little bit heavy at times, he can do that. But, you know, can this whole football team summon the gumption over the next 8 weeks to come back for that first preseason session in the best shape of their lives? And that's just not Zach Merritt and Darcy Parrish, who we expect to re-sign. It's everyone across that whole list. I don't think we've seen that from Essendon before. I mean, I remember rocking up early to one of their first scratch matches.
I remember this.
I was pretty disappointed.
Yeah, you said they were very disappointed.
But yeah. And I know that can be, you know, scratch matches can be a bit dancing in the season. They're learning a different game plan, but it just was a level off some of the other clubs. But anyway, they started the season strong anyway, and I felt like an idiot. But it's interesting. I think they're going to come back this year or come back this summer just in absolutely fabulous shape. So then we can't ask these questions anymore. And not only the senior guys, we've got to show that leadership. Talk about some of the young guys as well. So that draft crop, the Reed Perkins,
Nick Cox.
Those three top 10 picks.
Yep.
Like, they can make and break your footy club. And I think we all saw Nick Cox's first year, and you go, wow, averaging 20 possessions on the wing, incredible runner, left footer. Archie Perkins, seen him on a half forward flank and in patches in the midfield. Well, can he become an A-grade midfielder? And Reed, you just can't get his body right. So they're three huge ones. And you go back to the Aaron Francis, Darcy Parrish draft. Again, another top 10 picks, so almost top five picks, I think. Francis was across. You know, Parrish, you give a tick too. So there's five picks inside the top 10 that can make or break your rebuild. So it's a big year heading into that fourth year for those three bombers, Reed, Cox and Perkins. Just absolutely huge for them.
In terms of the changing of the list, will there be much change ins and outs? Like, we think Parrish at this stage is going to stay. Mackay, we don't know.
Yep.
So what actually is going to change, and who is actually going to come in to drive the standards at Essendon?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, I think Scotty, if anything, is looking at more picks and more kids. He wants to get the youngsters through the gate. Mackay is probably a bit more by necessity because they had such trouble stopping the bigger body forwards. You know, remember Tom Hawkins, 8 goals at the MCG. And because he's a free agent, he will cost nothing. I don't think Essendon will trade anything to get him.
Yeah.
But I think they cop him for free. I mean, they're after DeGoey last year. They could have got him for free as well. So I think Scott, all he said every year is, we're not going to compromise our long-term future. We're going to get the young kids in.
Yep.
So I don't think they're really, other than Mackay, I don't think they're really going to look to add at the top end. He's got a 4-year contract. It's going to be a longer-term build.
What happens if they don't get Mackay and still lose Brandon Zirk Thatcher?
No, I worry. It's a good point. I really worry about that because I think they've been so reliant on Laverty. I don't see why they should not lose Zirk Thatcher. Mm. You say, well, he wants, you know, too much money. But if that's the demand, that's a demand for him. When you're in Essendon, you haven't been a good club for a long time. You know, like, if they lose Zirk Thatcher, then, and Kelly hasn't really...
They're different players.
Yeah, it has an intercepting defender in, what is he, his fifth, sixth season.
Yeah.
You're so reliant on someone like him to really pop and lead and that sort of stuff. So Essendon has lost a lot of players over the past 10 years. He'd be one. You know, I think that'd be a disappointing outcome for the footy club if they do lose him.
And we have chatted a lot on this show, but they do have a lot of money, so they can spend.
Yep.
But are they still just holding out on, as you say, rebuild and then go after the big fish, whether that is Ben King?
Yeah, I don't see him sort of going for that real golden nugget this year. I think, because you got a time when you spend your money. So I think that is probably a year away. So then using that salary cap money at the moment to sort of front end some players, so you've still got that reserve at the end of next year. Hawthorn's another club who's got salary cap space and will be in the King market and sort of thereabouts. But in saying that, excuse me, and I think Peter Wright's probably had a bit of a disappointing year off the shoulder injury. A lot of forward lines are going mobile, competitive, small, speedy. Sort of, you wonder, it's sort of that the days of spending $1 million on a prime key forward. Like, I just got a bit of a question mark over that at the moment.
That's interesting.
Well, you look at Collingwood, right? Because they went sort of 600 McStay. Yep. You know, they're happy with, what was it, spent 500 on Cox or thereabouts.
Yep.
You know, Bobby Hill, McCreary. It's just a really, it's Graham Wright saying, this is where I think footy's going over the next 5 years, as opposed to the old Twin Tower sort of combination. They want versatile, flexible, hardworking, rotating forwards who are real competitors. Put your talent in the midfield, in the back line, behind the ball. That's where your class and power is. You're DeGoey Dacos. Forward of the ball is where your worker bees come in, your McCreary's. So, that's just what they've done. And I think that's really interesting. I think Geelong have done a little bit of that with some of their other pickups around the obvious ones. So, it's interesting space.
Clarkey, as always, plenty of holes at Essendon.
Yes.
We'll serve the next few weeks whether they can fill them.
I would love to get the last speech, the script of Brad Scott's speech or the text message that he sends about all this, because I reckon he'd be saying this, but in even more blunt fashion. So he'll be interested to see in what condition they all come back in 8 weeks' time.
Get the gel Kano's out, I think. They'll be doing some running.
Good call. Thanks, Will.
See ya. Well, that'll probably do it for today's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Will Hogan. As always, thanks to our guests, Sam Landsberger, Lauren Wood and Jay Clark. For all the latest footy news, head to the Herald Sun website. We have our Cap Space column with Jay Clark, 6 a.m. Thursday, Mick McGuan, 12 p.m. Thursday, and all the latest training, draft, trade news ahead of the first week of finals next week. See you later.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.